Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Turn me on, lovers. Bridie here, all by my lonesome. Our beloved Jeremy Saunders is a little under the weather these last couple of days, non-COVID related. And as such, it's just me introing this week's episode. I don't know how I'm going to fill up all the empty talking space. So I'm just going to throw it to the episode. This is an episode that we recorded back in early December, I think. It could have even been November. I don't know. We've been sitting on it for a bit, and it's a conversation I knew we were going to have for weeks before. You heard me talk about how excited I was for this guest. This week's guest is Jake Ernst. He lives in Toronto, Ontario, and is a therapist, a writer. He's got a podcast, and he works a lot with youth and trauma. And this was a conversation, again, like I said, I was so excited to have ahead of time. I've already listened back to this episode myself a couple of times to remind myself of some of the real gems that Jake has to offer. So enjoy today's episode. It's been an incredibly transformative conversation for both Jeremy and I know it will be for you too. Thanks so much for listening. See you on the other side.
Sweet. Well, this would be really fun. I don't, Bridie drives this bus, this bus being Turn Me On Podcast. I'm just a passenger who is
talks
along
a lot.
For the, who's, yeah, who's along for the ride, a very chatty, chatty passenger.
Good.
And oftentimes coming into these conversations, I don't have much like previous knowledge as to who we're talking to, but Bridie gave me like a really, really brief kind of rundown before you popped on here, Jake. Yeah. And I'm really excited because I know that you are someone who knows a thing or two about people living with trauma. And this is something that I've been dying to kind of dive into over the last, I don't know, like couple of months. Specifically, how trauma affects our interpersonal relationships, our romantic relationships, and on top of that, the things that people who are the partners of someone who's dealing with trauma can, the things that they can do to be like a really good support system. So if anything of what I just said there is like not your jam, feel free at any point to step in and go, hey, not my wheelhouse. But if I gathered correctly, I think that's kind of the train that we're hopping onto here. Jake, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself to our guests, but also give us a little bit of background into who it is that you are.
Yeah, of course. Wow. I feel like I'm the conductor of that train. I feel like you know exactly who I am just sort of by those statements. But yeah, my name is Jake Ernst, and I'm a therapist, and I live in Toronto. And that's primarily where I work out of, although I do practice all over Ontario because now we are working virtually. It's pretty an interesting kind of transition into the online psychotherapy sphere. But so in terms of, you know, my ability to support folks who've experienced trauma, that has certainly impacted it. But for the most part, I would say that I work with young people ages 12 to about 25, and then families. And so a lot of my work is supporting people who have experienced exactly what you described, Jeremy. People who have experienced complex trauma, or more specifically relational trauma, and developmental trauma. So trauma that happens in the stages of development, or a trauma that happens in relationships with other people. And so of course that occurs across all ages. And it's not just unique to intimate partners, but people like friends, important figures in your life, parents, or just with yourself and something else in the world. So I capture relational trauma in terms of a definition as pretty broad, but that's the gist of it.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Bride.
Well, my first question, if I may, is just, can we have a working definition of what's considered traumatic? Because I feel like it's a bit of a buzzword, but also like I feel I know so few people that could say with honesty that they've never had an experience where they didn't feel traumatized. So,
oh yeah. And listen, I feel like this is a very hot topic, and you know, you say it's a buzzword, and that's because it's largely overused. Overused to the sense that people think that, you know, I had a feeling or a hurt feeling, and people automatically code that or think that that's trauma. Or automatically say, oh, that traumatized me. And so, you know, there are many different definitions of trauma, but the one that I usually work from is trauma is anything that is too much, too fast, too soon, or more relationally speaking, anything that didn't happen enough. And so that could be like not enough love, not enough care, not enough attention. Mm-hmm. So it's anything kind of on both ends of the spectrum, anything that didn't happen not enough, but then also what things that happened too much.
Wow. Okay. And then the developmental period that you referenced, is that like the traditional ages 1 to 4 that we all think of, like our foundation of formation?
Yeah. We have our chronological age, and then we have our developmental stage, and those often get conflated and get mixed up. But your chronological age is like the number of years you've been on this earth, and then your developmental stage is like what you're talking about, your actual developmental milestones. And so sometimes that can be traumatic for people growing up, getting older, developing as a person and a human can also be traumatizing. So I think that if we're kind of, or to speak in very plain terms, trauma is anything that overwhelms your ability to cope in the moment. And so it often gets misnamed in that, like, people think it's an event and people think it's a set of events, but actually trauma is our response to those events. As an example, we could be in the exact same car accident, but we may not both experience it or respond to it as traumatic. So.
That is so cool. So why would, you know, if Jeremy and I were in the same car accident and I was the one who couldn't cope afterwards and he was fine. I mean, like, not who's right and who's wrong, but like, why are our experiences so different?
Hmm. Wow. Our experiences are so different because our experiences in the world are so different, right? Like if you think about just maybe that one example, but it may be broadened it out to maybe a relationship. We could be in the same relationship and at the very end of it or whatever rupture caused it to end, we could come out of it thinking, oh, that was a traumatic relational experience for me, whereas the other person may not. And so it's not to say that one person is right and one person is wrong. It's actually that like all of our nervous systems are right for us, right? And so in terms of that like somatic narrative, let's call it, it's our nervous systems respond relationally based on our prior experiences. And so when we think about the word somatic, somatic means mind plus body. So like, for example, some people may just have like mind specific traumatic or trauma coded to it, whereas some people also it codes within their body or within their soma. Somatics is the study of the mind and the body as it relates to what we're talking about.
Mm. Wow.
Somatic narrative. That's the first time I've heard that term before. Mm. Yeah, this is all super fascinating stuff. And it totally, when you mentioned how two people can come out of a relationship and both feel completely different about how that relationship left them, I totally get that. And I think that's something that probably happens more often than not, you know, when people in retrospect, looking back at relationships, the ways that people kind of react towards that time that was spent or that time that was shared. Go for it, Brad.
Sometimes an event, you know, breakup or a car accident or something else happens and we feel like we're unable to cope for a bit and then time passes and we're okay. You know, like a hard breakup or something. And if it goes away on its own, is it not trauma? Is it not coded as trauma?
You folks are asking all the right questions. Like this is such a, like what a great conversation. I feel, so there is a major difference between stress and trauma. And so, let's say for example, and actually maybe what I'll just say is that the major difference is that chronic stress is trauma, right? So repeated exposure to stress, it creates trauma. So again, we could come out of the same relationship and maybe we're experiencing stress because of it, right? Or we could be at work in a difficult like dynamic and we could be stressed by that situation. But if it's happening on a repeated or chronic basis, then that is what actually codes into our nervous system as trauma. And so the somatic release of that energy is trauma therapy, right? So the traumatic release, the traumatic retention, which is the holding of that trauma, is the work that we're trying to release.
Mm. I mean, as a, you know, clinical social worker and a therapist, yeah. How do you, and I, this is kind of veering away from our podcast and going into something a little bit different, but I can't not ask this. Like, how do you, how are you viewing what like we are all currently going through this, like this, because I'm imagining that like, okay, we're all going through this giant fucking stressor, which is COVID. And there's going to be when it's all said and done with, when the dust settles, there's going to be the people that come out of it and go, yeah, that was a really weird time, but like, I'm okay. I can move on and go on with their lives. And then there's going to be this other swath of the population that are like left feeling, I mean, I can't even articulate what is like what we are walking into in terms of like a collective trauma and in terms of a collective, you know, collectively, like how many people are going to come out on the other end of this not okay, or at least nowhere near as okay as they were before coming into it.
Totally. I can totally confirm, actually. And that would be the term that I would use to describe what's going on. It's a collective trauma. Absolutely. But you did bring up another really important word that I think is important to touch on, which is stressor, right? So mm-hmm. the difference between a stressor and a stress, those are two different things, right? So the okay. stressor is like the event. It's the thing that triggers a stress response, right? Or triggers our stress cycle. And so what we're actually talking about is how we handle the stress, not how we respond to the stressor, right? So that's how it's different. And that's how everyone can respond differently, is that the stressors may be the same, but the way that we hold or release that stress is different.
Mm.
I've heard the term somatic, like, cycle around in the beginning of this conversation already so early. And I do want to like dive into what like that process is. But like, before we go over there, I really want to know about like, I really want to know, like if I get into a new relationship, let's say with someone who, has had some traumatic event in their history, whether it be with a romantic partner or a parent or anything that might come up in our romantic relationship. Like what is that process of getting to know someone in that way, and how to adapt your own behavior so that you're considerate and not triggering, while also needing to have like healthy boundaries and healthy conversations?
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Again, another great question. And the way that I sort of add language to that dynamic or that experience is through the language of rupture and repair. Rupture in a relationship is any kind of conflict or any kind of system that kind of brings us or causes us to come apart. And repair is, of course, the rejoining of that. And so for every rupture, I usually say there needs to be an intentional practice of repair, or 5 repeated times where you can actually repair the rupture that took place. A rupture could be anything like a huge trauma, or it could just be like a disagreement. And so I think really what you're talking about and asking is like, to what degree does repair have to be robust enough to actually add value or to repair that rupture that took place, which is really hard. That's a really hard to get right, because we all have very different relational scripts. We all have very different like scripts for being in a relationship. Because it looks so different for each of us growing up.
Turn Me On Podcast will be back after this short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, no kidding. Which is another question, you know, like, what about, I mean, maybe this is a different realm completely, but like inherited trauma. Like if, you know, even if I got, I mean, how do I know, looking back at myself as a, you know, 4 to 6 year old, when a lot of my family dynamics were changing, how do I look at that and go, was that traumatic? Is that influencing like me now? Cause I think I'm okay. I'm not really interested in like, you know, digging in deeply and finding out that I have like unresolved issues with my, you know, my folks or what happened to me, because I've theorized a lot about that in my own personal time. And what I want is to just be not held up by what that, how that may have stunted me. And just like, because I can rationally understand that they were adults doing the best they could, humans, whatever. And I turn and like, I was pretty safe. I was pretty good. So, you know, like, but my parents were not. They were not safe. You know,
right. Like, and that's the challenge. that's the challenge, I think, right? Is that like, as a social species, we have this really innate desire to be connected to one another, which leaves us so vulnerable and so, like, unfortunately prone to being affected by disconnection, right? And being really disconnected through some like really seemingly difficult circumstances. And so what I want to offer here is that, yeah, like our early life experiences can absolutely be traumatic, but they can also be incredibly reparative too, right? And resilience building and like strength giving. And so that's, I think, the balance also too that you're naming, right? Is that like, to what extent was it the hard parts or the harmful parts that made me who I am? Or am I just a collection of like the good parts, the bad parts, the hard parts, the sad parts, the easy parts, the exciting parts, all those types of things, right? And of course, that answer is just different for everybody. Right. It's hard to get right. And it's hard to kind of give you an answer that says like, yeah, this is what made you who you are. And this is like, it was this event or these things that kind of, but the reality is that we're all just a puzzle, you know?
Is it sort of true that we kind of create similar dynamics in our romantic relationships that are modeled after like the models of relating that we had when we were kids?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course. But like, and it's not for like, it's not for some like complex, like psychological reason, right? It's actually just because like we repeat what we know, right? Like we actually crave what's familiar and we do things that, you know, that we know really well. And unfortunately that also happens with like the, let's say the negative parts about us or like the more unloving parts about us, right? It all comes with us, right?
I love that. I'm writing that down.
And again, not for any like complex psychological reason. I think it's actually just because like we are the sum of all of our parts and our, like our entire past comes with us. So it makes sense why it would.
I wrote that down. It all comes with us. And this morning in my meditation, I was being guided by my friend and teacher and brother-in-law, Ted Grant. And he was talking about like this bag of like stuff that we're carrying. And then we go into meditation or we go into a yoga practice or any sort of maybe some somatic release work. And we get to take some of those things out of the bag and like examine them sometimes. Maybe we're not ready to let go of them or whatever, but like just to be with them in a safe space. So maybe this is a good opportunity to ask you what somatic, just as a word, has been showing up everywhere online in my bubble over the last few months. And I don't know what it is, and yet I know I've done this work before. So can you explain?
Yeah. So like somatic really is just about like body-based work. And I use body as an inclusive term to include the brain because it's a part of our body. But really it's a separation of like the mind and then also the body as it comes together. So it's like the pairing. And the reason why it's really hot right now, really sexy or really trendy, is because it really is expanding our understanding of mental health in a very unique way that doesn't just include like wellness from the neck up. It actually expands, like actually we carry our stress in our body and our emotions actually live out in our body. Really somatic work is about acknowledging that really essential part of our wellness, which is that we carry our stress not just in our brain and not just in our thoughts, but actually in our body, like physically and physiologically.
Can you give examples of what that looks like?
Bridie, do you mean specifically like somatic work looks like, or what carrying that stress in the body looks like?
Well, both. Yeah. I would love to know, like, for people, you know, we have a lot of people who listen to this show who are, you know, they might be involved in some of the same things that Jeremy and I have been involved in, like yoga, meditation, acting. We've guaranteed once we hear more from you about what the somatic work can look like when you apply it physically, guaranteed we've done that in our acting classes. And also like, you know, we've got people who are coming to us from their own, you know, practices, a lot of therapists and whatnot. But we also have a lot of young folks who are listening from small places all over the world who are really just starting to ask themselves questions for the first time about like what this experience is that they're having in their body. So yeah, when you say it can live out in the body, maybe you could give us some examples of like patterns that people might be seeing in their own bodies or life that could be pointing at, hey, there's some stuff there to work through.
Yeah. And I think probably more impactful than it will be for me to tell you, why don't we just experience it together? Because there's a big difference, right, between me telling you cognitively so you understand what I'm talking about and you actually feeling it, right? So maybe if you're listening right now, and of course this includes you both, tune into your jaw right now and try to figure out like where your tension is stored. Are you clenching your jaw? Is it loose? Is it tight? Maybe if you move down to the neck, you can maybe feel like a tightness in your throat, or maybe it's more loose. Maybe if you also move a bit further down, and we're doing just a body scan here, so you're going right into your shoulders, does it feel like collapse? Does it feel open? Moving down into your heart, is it beating fast? Is it beating slow? Tuning into like the tension of your chest. Are your muscles really tight? Are they loose? I know I'm going fast here, but really I hope that I'm drawing a clear picture of what somatic work can be and what it is, right? So I'm hopefully cueing you into what it feels like, not just telling you this is how it is, right? Or these are some examples, right? Because there's a really fundamental difference there, that once we're able to feel it, we can start to heal it. And once we can feel it, we can release it.
Is this so I've been seeing a therapist for a little while, and I had went through a breakup not too long ago, and I was feeling a lot of anger around that experience, and you know, around the same time, like, my dog was dying, and like, all, you know, and COVID's going on, and all this shit, and my therapist brought me through this exercise where we, you know, like this visualization where I envisioned what the feeling of anger was in me, and like, and you know, he like had me take it out of my body and like and imagine what it looked like and the shape of it, and you know, is it hot, is it cold, Is it moving? What does it do? And then and then like putting it back in my body, but creating a space for it to hold it in there, yada yada, whatever. Is that like, I'm now taking you through my notes of my last fucking like just shrink appointment.
Actually, my favorite part about this is that whatever, because I think that's such a human response to talking about emotions. Or just like,
I can feel it. I can feel it coming up again. I'm like, oh God, I'm going to stuff that down. Is that an example of like somatic work?
Yes.
That one. Okay. Right. Yeah. And it, you know, it's funny, Bridie, like you did equate it to like some of the work that we've done in theater school or even, you know, even to speak to like our teacher training as yoga teachers. Like it is very, that physical work, it does have this, this very tricky way of, or sneaky way of like unearthing a lot of deep-seated past emotion or what have you. And it's so fascinating to see how it works and how it manifests when you're in that type of work. For somebody who's out there who doesn't have a therapist, doesn't speak to a therapist, who maybe identifies as someone who's never really had too much past traumatic issues or anything like that, yet someone who lives a very static lifestyle, like someone who's not, who doesn't typically like move their body very much. Can you speak to like the kind of benefits that someone might find, not from a physical standpoint, not from like, oh, move your body, it's good for your health. But I mean like moving your body for the sake of your mental health and like what that can do for one's self. The reason I bring that up is because especially right now, there's probably a fucking fair amount of people listening to this where they're just stuck in their goddamn homes. And like they, even though they weren't moving very much before COVID, they definitely aren't now. And perhaps like going through again, this collective stressor, is there, you know, what kind of work could that person maybe decide to take up to sort of move these things around and find some sort of shift?
Oh, baby. Being stuck in our homes, like that sucks. But like, let's name the real problem, which is being stuck in your body while stuck in your home, right? And so a lot of the work that people can really do is something called embodiment work. And this is a really important element of somatic work, but then also of trauma therapy. In trauma therapy, what we are trying to do is to allow someone to re-experience their body again. Oftentimes, trauma disconnects us from all of those things. It disconnects us from social. It disconnects us from our body. It disconnects us from like any sort of rationality in some cases. And what we're trying to do is to reconnect. And so a lot of the work that I do a lot of actually is helping people reconnect with their body. And so like you said, not for like the health benefits of moving, like I do a lot of movement based work for the benefits of actually getting people access to feeling again. Many people who I work with do report like feeling numb, feeling dissociated, feeling disconnected. And so a lot of the work is getting people connected again. And some really important elements of historically, like from the beginning of time when people have been like releasing trauma from themselves. When we kind of trace it back, they're doing a lot of really cool work actually just around like storytelling for trauma release, movement for trauma release, like singing and like chanting and like a lot of like really cool like voice kind of work, and then also breath work for trauma release. And then like you said, movement. So those I would say are like the four categories of trauma therapy, which really helps people get into their body. That's really the core of it. Did it's I answer amazing. Your question? I wasn't.
Yeah. Sure. No, absolutely. I just started talking. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
It seems almost too simple. It's almost like, you mean there's no like tool that I can go out there and like buy and apply, or like, you know, like some book I can read and be fine. It's like, I just, all I need is this, what I have.
All I need to do is a jumping jack.
Listen. So I think that like, for me as a trauma therapist, I sometimes view myself as a magician, because like the magic in it is like helping people like actually embody that knowing, and not just like through like an intellectual sense. Right. So like you said, it makes sense to our brain, but like it's so much harder to apply, which I think is magic, because like it's not easy to do that. So like I think trauma therapy is magic, but that's just my opinion.
I would imagine that it must get harder with the older demographic that you work with, and must be sort of easier with the younger demographic, because they can flex those imagination muscles a little better.
Yeah. You're completely naming the reason why I work with young people. Yeah. Right? I find young people are so much more accessible, and I find that young people really have a quest for that kind of learning. And again, I don't say that to be ageist or like to make an assumption about older people, but I mean, like, I just think that like there's such, like you said, an imagination and such like a quest for knowledge and learning. And there's like a moldability, adaptability there that I just love. And so for me, it reminds me of me as a young person. And that's partially why I like working with young people, is that it kind of brings me back to that like childhood, like innocence and that like play element that is so like healing. And I just love that. So tapping into that is a lot of the work that I do too, across all ages.
This might be let's see where this goes. I'm curious to know your thoughts on like from more of like a supportive role perspective, or like the role of the caretaker or the supporter. For an example, let's say somebody is getting into a relationship with someone, and you know, this person isn't aware that this person that they're dating is coming from a background of you know, PTSD or CPTSD or something, and then through dating it starts to become they start to become a little bit more aware of like, oh, there's some past trauma here, and this is very new for me. I've never actually like been in a relationship with someone before who's had a history of complex PTSD or something. What kinds of tips or suggestions would you have for someone who finds themselves in that type of scenario where they're stumbling into a relationship where very quickly they start to realize that their new partner is coming from a place of pretty deep-seated trauma, and yet they don't feel like they maybe have the tools to be there to support, even though they want to, you know?
Oh, wow. Jeez. These are such great questions. I would say there are two main tips that I would suggest. The first is the corrective experience, which I'll talk about in just a sec. And then there's also bids for connection is what I'll call it. So these are two really key relational skills, I think, that often go out the window when someone who's experienced trauma is a part of a relationship. And of course that is impacted by our previous relationships, but really the corrective experience is something that can really help repair trauma in like in a relationship. And we're specifically talking about like a corrective emotional experience. An emotional experience that's going to repair some of the past hurt. And so that happens over time, unfortunately. It's not as fast as we'd like it to be, but and then of course bids for connection. So oftentimes something that creates rupture in a relationship is missing opportunities or bids for connection. So an example might be like your partner had a really stressful day and they like come home and they let out a big sigh. And then oftentimes we miss that bid for connection and instead we ignore it or instead we look past it. And so responding to bids for connection is a really important skill that people can use in relationships. And the hard part is being able to spot the bids for connection.
Right. Yeah. I suppose that, I mean, yeah, yeah. I suppose that learning to spot them, I mean, I guess like it comes from again, over time, developing that, the communication skills to to talk to that partner about, you know, the ways that they offer up these bids for connection in a way. Is that?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like really what we're talking about is like, what do emotions look like in a relationship? Mm-hmm. Right. And for some people it's like, I'm going to get really angry because you never do the dishes, or all this stuff is going to compound over time. And then I'm just going to explode at you. So right. Mm-hmm. It could look like anger, or it could look like, okay, well, you don't understand my needs, so I'm going to shut down, or I'm going to withdraw. And so a lot of that is like dependent on our relational scripts from when we have grown up. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what did all of that rupture and repair look like in our families? And when we didn't have that rupture and repair process in place, that can really affect us. So it's not to say that like the presence of rupture is actually a bad thing. What we're actually talking about is that it really actually depends on the level of repair that is in place.
Mm.
That it determines our ability to work through that, right?
Right. Yeah. It makes me think about how tough it must be for some people who are coming from a place of PTSD or something, you know, something similar, and finding themselves in the dating world, you know, and whether, you know, these sorts of like triggers come up early in the relationship, and just thinking about how hard that must be for, especially if the person who's on the other end of it has no, like, they just go, well, I guess that person's fucking crazy, like on to the next, you know, like just how tough it must be in to find yourself in the dating pool when you're struggling with so much past trauma.
Yeah. And the hard part is that a lot of people think that trauma is the rupture, but actually trauma can actually be the absence of like not having enough repair too. Right.
Right. Right.
So, it's not just like the event or the stressor, which might be a rupture, but it's actually sometimes our response to that event. So the actual, repair. And so the absence of repair absolutely can be traumatic for folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And potentially this vicious cycle that just continues and continues and continues. And
exactly. Mm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about like a one-off fight here, right? We're not talking about like one disagreement or like, oh, I don't really like how you do the dishes, right? Like, or I don't really like what you don't, you know, what you buy from the grocery store. We're talking about like repeated and chronic exposure to these really hard things, like harm, abuse, like that type of thing.
Right, right.
I love that you brought up bids for connection. We were just talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the show. And I couldn't remember where I had encountered that phrase, but I was like, oh my God, this explains so much of my frustration in relationship, you know, whether it's with Jeremy or my other partner or, you know, but mostly I can really feel that. I can really feel like that coming
home
and sighing.
What are you saying?
And having my partner I'm not sighing for me. I mean, I am, because it's so good for like your health. But you know, it's like that. Please ask me how I'm doing.
You know what, babe? Right. I have to say, in you saying that right there, if I ever sigh ever and you're in earshot, every fucking single time you chime in and go, hey, what's wrong? Every single time. And 9 times out of 10, I'm always like, huh? Oh no, I'm just, I don't know. I was just tired.
Just breathing.
Like, yeah, I'm just breathing. Yeah. I'm just trying to get in enough oxygen. I don't know what.
I'm just living my complicated life.
Yeah. But this explains a lot now. I see. So anytime I hear you sigh, I'm going to.
Just existence.
Yeah.
But listen, it's actually not about the response, right? It actually has more to do with the check-in, right? And the actual hey, I care about you, regardless of what your answer is. It's I care about what your answer is, or I care to check in. or I care to notice, right? So that's the hard part, is that people miss it.
Yeah.
So they easily go unchecked, you know?
Well, I love that so much of what you've said today is about, is relatable to me in terms of like, it's mindfulness. If you have a practice, whether it be for your nervous system, or your body or your mind, that has to do with just like being present for even a fleeting few seconds a day, then you'll be way better tuned to pick up those sort of signals that are coming and to sense how your partner is doing and things like that. But, so I'm really appreciative for that. I have a question that I almost forgot that I wanted to ask you. So I'm going to do it now before I forget. And it's about routes to safety.
Yeah.
Okay. So I found you on the internet because of a headline that said, "Move over, love languages. Have you heard about routes to safety?" And I was like, well, I have to read this because love languages. Yeah.
Pardon?
Exactly. So could you give us a little breakdown of what that's all about?
Yeah, I sure can. So the love languages, for people that aren't familiar, are essentially like relational scripts and ways that we give and receive love in relationships. And I sought out to complicate that a bit further because I actually don't think a lot of it, at least in my experience with the people that I work with, a lot of it doesn't usually have to do with love. It actually has a lot to do with safety, and has a lot to do with the trauma that we've experienced, or at least the emotional scripts that we bring into a relationship. And so love, I look at as an outcome, whereas I think safety is a prerequisite. And part of a question that I was constantly asking, I was like, okay, so if I'm noticing this thing with my clients, and like, how do we get there? And so part of what I figured out was, and just through my work with clients, I figured out that actually how safe we feel determines how well we feel in this world. And so when I kind of look at like safety, and not just like physical safety, like whether or not I'm safe from like a present danger, but like emotional safety, meaning like, am I loved? Am I cared for? Do I feel like I matter? Do I feel like my emotional needs are met? And so what I actually know just through my own work is that safety is actually trauma therapy. So like establishing a sense of safety, that's how we can repair trauma. And so when you kind of extrapolate that and expand it out, well, actually safety is a love language. Safety actually is a way that that people can understand themselves in relationships. And so when I dug into that further, I actually found out there are many different ways that people can restore that sense of safety or experience safety in the world. And so the roots of safety goes through the 8 different ways that people feel safe in the world. And as it turns out, through a very viral article on Healthline, it resonates for people. People are like, oh yeah, that is true. So I look at it as like the trauma-informed love languages. It's the love languages like for trauma, which I think I would argue as humans, I think that we've all encountered some level of trauma in our life. So I think that's why it hits so different for people.
Can you give us if it's possible, like the list of the 8?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see how well my memory can serve me in this moment. So
you want me to pull up the article.
So I would say, so the number one root of safety that people use and rely on is something that I call inner guidance. Inner guidance is the traditional kind of like wellness model of like helping people feel safe and resourced. And so you'll see a lot of therapists using inner guidance as a tool for helping restore safety. You'll see like a lot of parents using it. And a lot of teachers kind of applying it to students. And so really what inner guidance is about, like the individual. So how can an individual feel more safe themselves? But the roots of safety acknowledge that not all of them are resourced within the self. Actually that like, because we're a relational species, we need other people in order to feel safe. So that's why some of the other roots of safety talk about relationships. So one of the other roots of safety is quality relationships in our life that help us feel safe. Two more that I'll just kind of explain. And these ones are kind of opposites of one another. One of them is private retreat. So feeling safe by being alone and being like being able to kind of recharge, like and feel more safe when we're alone. And then, what was the language that I used? The other one is essentially the opposite of that, is that I get my safety from being around other people. And then there is also another one is sensory experiences. So using our senses to gain that sense of safety. And so that's another inner route that we take in order to feel safe. And then I think the last ones are about common humanity and protective measures. I think I nailed them all. I don't know. Well, anyway, so
who's counting?
I think I maybe got 8 out of 9. But anyway, yeah. So there are many different ways that we feel safe. And that's really the basis of roots of safety.
I have a question about the private retreat one, because I think that was the one that grabbed me right off and was like, does that explain why in conflict I need to go for a walk before solving the problem?
Okay. Yes, exactly. It also explains why people like hide under their covers when they feel scared in the dark. It also explains like why people prefer like really small spaces. To retreat and to get away is absolutely a way that people access safety.
That's really, really cool. I'm glad I found that article and that so many other people, I didn't realize it was viral. I'm glad. I thought I was the only one.
And, have you guys ever heard of the Beatles? They're amazing.
The Beatles?
I just stumbled across this really wicked new band called the Beatles. And Bride, we'll make sure that we, for those of you who've been living under a rock and haven't seen that article, we will include that in the show notes. Jake, this has been a real pleasure and a real treat to chat with you and to be able to prick your brain for even just a moment in these really weird times that we find ourselves living in. I know that you have a new podcast, correct? Is this?
I do.
Yeah, do you want to plug that? Let us know. Where can people find you? Where can people listen to you?
Wow. So I make a joke on the podcast that at the end of every episode, I say, like my co-host Simon, he'll say, Jake, like, where can people find you? And my response, sorry, it made me think of it. My response is often something silly and stupid, like, I don't know, at the buffet stand or like like in the line at the grocery store. I don't know. People can find me on social media at MSW Jake, or you can listen to my podcast, which is called This Isn't Therapy, where we talk about all the things that come up in therapy. But we're kind of reaching in and bringing them out of the therapy room as a way to normalize conversations about what happens in therapy. So amazing. It's a fun time. Yeah.
I've listened to the first few episodes and you two have a good thing going. Like at first I was like, a filmmaker?
What?
What does he have to say? But anyway, you guys are amazing. You have a really good relationship online and the sound is really good. Jeremy, you're going to be really quite pleased.
Yeah,
all right. Thank you.
He's a sound snob.
Good sound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. That's amazing. Simon is one of my very best friends, and it's his brother, who's a musician who does the sound. So shout out to Jordan.
Amazing. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day today. This has been really, really fun.
And thank you for the incredible work that you do. That's so nice to know that someone like you is out there working with the young people and helping people live happier lives.
Listen, I'm on a mission to like get all the therapy work out there. There's no reason why it should be stuffed inside of a therapy room. So I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for today's episode. Thank you for being here with us every week. We are so grateful to our patrons, without which this podcast would not be possible. Thank you so much to our dear friends over on Patreon. You can find us there if you want to support us during these strange and unusual times. And moving forward, we've got some merch on there and some other benefits that you can choose from. It's patreon.com/turnmeon. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. And that's a great place to send any recommendations you think that we should check out, specifically future guests. We love to deliver what you are asking for. You know, say what you want. Maybe you'll get it. You can also rate, review, and subscribe over on Apple podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Those reviews mean the world to us and they keep us findable on the charts. That's it for this week. Until next week, go spend some quality time with yourself.